The meeting will come to order, and members, we now have a quorum thanks to Representative Garofalo walking in the door. And so, could I have a motion to approve the minutes of February 13th?
So moved.
Representative Anzell moves approval of the minutes of February 13th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Then we have the minutes of February 14th. Representative Dominguez moves approval of the minutes of February 14th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have a treat today. And before we get to the main star attraction, I would like to invite up one of our pages for today, whose name is Joel Hansen. Joel, if you could come up to the table. And Mr. Hansen has been in model government here at the legislature, I understand, for the last couple of years. And he's also been a student of our guest attraction for today. And so he has not actually been briefed on the request I'm now going to make of him, but I understand he's up to surprise tasks. So I would like to ask you, Mr. Hansen, if you could introduce Representative Gene Pawlowski, who we understand you have known for quite a while as a student. Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, should I identify myself for the record?
Please do.
Joel Hansen, Junior, Winona Senior High School. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I would like to introduce to you an esteemed representative from Winona County, and not only representative, but teacher who has influenced the lives of many high schoolers, both now to come and in the past. He's done a great job of teaching me as a student and teaching the ways of government through my legislature, which he oversees. So without further ado, Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hansen. Well done. And so now we can see that there's a good product in what this process that we're going to have before us. Representative Pawlowski, welcome to the committee.
Chair, members of the committee, you have in front of you a bill book. The bill book is the product of Mr. Hansen's work. The bill book is the Winona Modernist Model Legislature bill book. It is 2 days at Winona State University. On the cover, first of all, look at the cover. You see a public school, Winona Senior High. You see a public middle school, Winona Middle School. You see a private school, Potter High School. And you see a charter school, Montessori School, all participating in a two-day model legislature with 120 students of their own House, Senate, Governor. And the ticket in is to take one of our bills, they do a research paper. In my class, they have to do a rather formal research paper with at least two sources pro, two sources con. And for 2 days, they're in committee in the morning. They're in session in the afternoon. I'm going to show you what it's like in a second. And they pass their own legislation. They elect their own leadership. I have been the advisor to this since 1975, so I know a little bit about it. The bill book you're looking at costs $1,800 to print. The program itself is $3,000. This is all raised privately. We do not sell peaches. We do not sell candy. We do not make them consume or do anything that would be detrimental to their health. There's a page called Gravitas. At the bottom of that page are people who contribute. Cash or check, we'll take either one, for this program. Grades 6 through 8 are pages. Grades 9 through 12 are members of the House or Senate or Governor's Office. And grades 13 through 16 are my Winona State students, who are potential social studies students. You're going to see them in a second. And they are advisors to the non-standing committees of the model legislature, to the governor, and to the leadership of the House and Senate. The bill book is color-coded by committee, so we can track a bill visually as it moves from the committees into the House or Senate. Mr. Hansen's been a little bit shy here. He was in the House for 2 years. took my Shakespeare bill this year, gutted it, put the language in order to save the Wilkie. You got that to the governor's desk. And he got it to the governor's desk. They passed approximately the same percentage bills we do. So with that, what you're looking at here, in my conversation with the chair, she wanted to know what technology was like in the classroom. This is a hybrid class. There isn't a classroom like this in the high school except for mine. And this is donated or I raised these through grants. But the governor mentioned an iPod, right, in the state of the state. I wasn't too sure he knew what an iPod was, except his daughters used it. This is an iPod. This is an 80 gigabyte video iPod. I use it in my classrooms. You're going to see it in a second. It has 5,000 years of history on it. It goes from prehistory all the way through Napoleon to the Aztecs, to the Maya, to China, in clips of 2 minutes to 50 minutes. It also does all my American government. If I was to put in this room the VHS or DVDs, it would be in a container about like this, that have all been ripped by me, which is a technical term, converted into P4s, and mounted on this for you, so you're going to see it. What's up here, we have not abandoned books. In my world history class, I created what I hope is a digital textbook. I started this in 1998 with a program called AuthorWare, if you want to know the state, and I'm still working on it. However, we use Will Durant. You can see the letter there from Will Durant to me in 1974. So Durant is sort of the core of what we do in the story of civilization. And yes, the last 4 or 5 volumes were Will and Ariel Durant, so I hadn't forgotten that. But what I want to go through are a couple of things. I'm going to do this backwards, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go through the impact first and then show you what produced this. This is an email dated August 2004 from a student I had in 1987 talking about, she's now a lawyer in Washington. She lives by Washington's cathedral. She and her husband actually walk around the cathedral every night, and the email talks about how her husband is so impressed by the fact that she can describe gargoyles, grotesques, flying buttons, stained glass windows, the difference between Romanesque and Gothic architecture. Mm-hmm. This is a postcard from a student, Jack Becker. The painting is Raphael's Madonna with the goldfish. Now, Jack says, gee, here I am in Florence, reading Dante, Boccaccio, Raphael, Michelangelo, Leonardo. I remember first seeing this painting junior year in your class. It was also the first time I heard of art history. Florence is beautiful. I love the Renaissance. Jack now is a graduate student, or was when he sent this card. He's a little modest. His graduate degree is in art restoration. He was restoring Raphael's Madonna in the building. My point in this is, if he hadn't seen it in class, if we hadn't done this, I don't know if he would have been restoring Raphael's Madonna. If we go to the next one, this is another student, Tom Van Horn. Now, these are years after they take my class. This is when they're in college or beyond. He's saying, in the past few months, I've seen so many cathedrals, I didn't think any would overly impress me. I was wrong. You were right. I'd like to repeat this to my students. I was wrong. You were right. Chart is like no other. This is from a unit. I have Gothic and Romanesque architecture. And we spend about 3 days going on a tour of Normandy and the Ile-de-France. We build a Gothic cathedral. They take a look at Mont Saint-Michel. In my class, architecture, art, literature, music are as important as anything else. And that's why this medium is very important. This is from a student. This is December 06, who went to Westminster Cathedral. And you can see, thanks for the introduction to world history. So a lot of this is current. When I returned from the Capitol this spring, this painting was on my wall by Danielle Geard. My room is filled with parts on the walls by students who we now use. This is the head of Botticelli's Birth of Venus. Some of you use Adobe Photoshop. They made a killing on this, and I think Botticelli's still waiting for the royalties. And then the paper did a little story on it. This is Representative Peggy Levick, a legislator. We can't even teach legislators. She saw this presentation in 1998. She sent the postcard. Jean, I was thinking of you as I walked around the Chimera and Gargoyles and the South Tower of Notre Dame. Thanks to you, I know the difference. In my class, they have to know the difference between a gargoyle and a grotesque. And they, and it's part of the quiz, it's part of what I do with architecture. Mm-hmm. I also tell them that when they are go-to-gares, and the French are giving them the French tour guide will not. So be sure to correct the French tour guide because it upsets them greatly. This is another student, Valerie Shane. You can see it's above my phone. This is monochromatic, but this is one of the Qin warriors. And of course, this is part of the unit that we go to China. This is a Tony Durand. Some of you may know Tony Durand. Tony is a photographer now in L.A. and New York. He is high fashion. This is his Qin Tut. If this were not on the wall, if it were on canvas, I'd have it at home, and I'd probably be selling it retired. I'm still trying to figure out how to move the wall. This is actually a paper scale model of Chartres Cathedral, cut from pieces of paper with a razor blade, then scored and put together by a student. You can see Tut in the background, and yes, that's the Democratic section. Here's the Republican section, left and right, it's balanced. Just in case anyone sees. This is Da Vinci. This is a Greek vase. I have a unit in my Greek unit on vases and where they come from. And by the way, I can't mention it here, but potters were considered even below actors in ancient Athens. And another profession that they considered to be the oldest profession. They'd be embarrassed by what we're paying for these things now. This is another student with a postcard from the Rosetta Stone. And I think at this point, what I'm going to do is opt out of this, because there's just too much here. And now go to what these things look like. If you have questions, there is a test after this.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm going to go to my legislature first. Yes, question.
No, I said we better get the answers correct.
If you don't get the answers correct, I don't retest, so. This is my legislature. I want to just go through this quickly. These are my Winona State students the night before putting that bill book together. So my entire class helps us set up the Wednesday night before. This is how the bill book was put together until this year. You're looking at the first digital textbook. This textbook was put together entirely digitally by having all the schools send the material. We build it digitally and then printed it out. This is how it was done until this year, cutting and pasting on my floors with scissors and tape. And you take a look at the size of that thing. That was about a two-week project on my floor. Now, they do it and they like it. Not that much, actually. This is what the house looks like prior. This is the house in session. Now remember, these are 120 students from the schools on the front of your bill book. Running for office. Here they are with the governor coming up. But by the way, their rules are a mimic of Masons. They've taken Masons and condensed it down. It's not in there, but it's in a separate section. This is the governor. Awards. There's no dress code. They have decided that it's an advantage to dress up, so they go to a place where they get cheap suits, the guys, and it's always sort of a retro thing. They actually sort of look like Daphne.
I'm glad you said that.
The person with the computer here is one of my Winona State students. Winona State is the only laptop university in the Minsky system. Their ending project in my teaching social studies in the secondary class is a journal of how this is a hands-on learning experience. But during the 2 days, the high school student who chairs the committee gets a college student as their committee administrator. And all our leadership gets college students who have laptops who can do research for them. And as Mr. Hansen knows, it comes in handy, doesn't it? He's nodding, yes, for the record. This is one of the chairs going through exactly what we do, listing bills. You can see ways and means. Again, students helping, and the pages in the background. The pages can be treated well, or sometimes they get to be like folders, but we don't encourage that. And these are all our committees, there are 9 of them. And they have to present bills, and if you look in your bill book, you can see at the top where these have to go. So this is a major, major project for us. parents come and see the president of the university and the principal, they're monitoring, they're trying to get money out of education. Isn't it him? Yeah. More about, here's the chair who was on crutches trying to get his bill passed and help him. And so help him. My students, the rules committee, this is the Senate rules committee, they're a little more relaxed. This is the House, this is the Senate, the governor, and this is the president of the Senate telling the governor and the speaker of the House what she's going to do, which is interesting considering we have a female speaker. This is the Senate. So with that, what I'm going to do is get out of this one, and again, if you have questions, yell out, and go to this one. This is what one of the PowerPoints looks like. The data they know they have to know and the graphics they have to know, and it says video clip. The video clips are on here. So what I'm going to do is to show you what the static looks like. And we discuss all of this. Maps are in every unit, of course. Locations. The drinking of Hemlock, which some of us do before session. This is the unit on democracy. Notice that this unit deals with democracy, so what I did was, my next thing is, these are actual students who were in my class who were in Model Edge. Because if we're studying the formation of democracy, it would make sense to use model legislature as the illustration. But then, they go to the video iPod, this is what you've been, I think, waiting for.
We did a great meeting place comes out from the Bear Rock. Here, in the shadow of the Acropolis, the citizens of Athens could now gather to discuss the future of their city. These very steps, rich and poor alike, could stand and address their fellow citizens. This is the ancestor of the British House of Commons, the American Congress, of parliaments across the world. And where government had once been decided by the strength of a sword arm or the thrust of a sharpened spear, Pleisthenes instituted the simple vote. A white pebble from yes, a black pebble from no. And with it.
Now, these little clips illustrate what we just had on the static. They're held accountable for all of this. This isn't just we show it as we're accused of sometimes in social studies. And it goes away, comes back in quizzes and in tests. I was actually going to give you a test, a real test, not the one Mary looking at. But a real test on content to take a look at it. Now, this, we can go almost anywhere. So if we go to, for instance, this is an interesting little clip dealing with, I don't know if any of you have had lunch, but if you haven't, or if you have, now if I can just find it. Let's go to this one. Let's go to the Maya. This is how quickly we can go back and forth.
Turned bustling cities into ghost towns to be reclaimed by Mother Nature. Centuries later, answers to the mystery surrounding the majestic people
have like kings who... Let's see that some of the legislators on this side said they can't see.
Sorry.
No, I can't see.
That's the problem.
No,
that'd be helpful.
Yeah. Let me go back. What's on here is almost everything you can possibly imagine for... This is the raising of an obelisk. So wherever I go...
To represent rays of the sun.
I can actually illustrate what it is. So this is just a static picture,
The largest standing obelisk reached 100 feet high and weighed up to 500 tons.
This granite giant abandoned in the quarry at Aswan because it developed a large crack that had been 139 feet tall.
Now, this is new. I've never used the iPod until this year. The advantage of the iPod was when I was converting all this to digital, I was going to get a large hard drive, about 250 gigabytes. But the hard drive, you can't see. This is 80 gigabytes, and the advantage is if a student misses this, you just take this, put the earphones in, you can go off to the side, come in before or after school, and view it. If the technology is available in the school district, we can mount these. We can either mount it on a website, or we can mount it on our server. The technology at Monsignor High School is not there. It's not there. But this is close. This means I don't have to set something up extra. Anything I do, we can use this technology to show them how to do it. So when the governor said video, I was intrigued because, frankly, this is where we should be going. Now, the cost of all of this is a MacBook Pro computer. It's about, this one's probably close to $2,000. The 80 gig iPod's about $400. The digital projector's about $1,200. And the sound unit's about $100. So you're looking at an investment in each classroom, the size of it, not to mention the time in order to put all this together. So no matter where you want to go, what era, this is the format you can use. I literally convinced the superintendent, I don't want textbooks anymore. They're out of date, they're trashy, they're too expensive, they're $6,200, and they're geared to the lowest common denominator of Texas or California. This is a much better format that allows me to create anything I want, any unit. And it allows it to be new. As history moves, this moves. As government moves, this moves. All my government materials are on here, too.
Teacher prep. I mean, you're constantly creating new. That means you're constantly redoing the curriculum.
Yeah.
Is this going to be generally accepted by all social studies instructors or any other instructors that want to do this all the time, as opposed to getting my curriculum set up and now I modify it each year?
I don't mean that disrespectfully. All I'm doing is upgrading what is a required piece of data to as current as I can get it. I'm not technically changing the curriculum at all, but if we're going to study ancient Egypt, I think it's better to study it from the most current level. In fact, we can go to building a pyramid here if you want to see the most current, the digital recreation of building a pyramid.
But it's still building a pyramid.
Yeah, we're still building a pyramid, but we're doing it now in a way. Now, there's a letter all of you should have in your pack. It's from a student of mine. It's dated December 22nd. That student left me that letter before I left for the legislature. I want you to take a look on the side and view a couple of lines. She is a student who was until this class, very interested, should be in your packet and passed up, very interested in science and math. Take a look at her comments about how she wants to use this in conjunction with science and math. There should be a couple of lines along the side that you can take a look at.
Almost to the bottom.
And the impact also of the visuals. That seeing this made it infinitely more interesting to the point now where she wants to be an archaeologist and she wants to study ancient Egypt. And until this point, she wanted to go into science and math. And I'm not dissuading her from going into science and math, but she wants to blend the two. Also know that this sent her to the library to study Egypt. So the technology works both ways if used well. And it can work. It can make it. I have more fun than they do. I have infinitely more fun in class than students. This is just like playtime. You get to go anywhere and do anything, and you get to do it with cutting edge material. This is where we should go with education. And wherever, I can go to the Maya, the Aztec. Whatever's there, we can use it. It's going to take an investment manager. And the investment's going to have to come from us. Because this is the only thing like it in my school district. And I don't know if too many teachers are using iPods. This iPod's full. This 80 gig iPod is so full I had to buy 160 gig backup so I can rotate stuff through. So that's how much material I have. But it's a lot better than buying textbooks that simply don't reflect the best knowledge or what we can teach in Minnesota, what we can do. I could go through a lot more if you want to see. I probably got it.
Thank you very much, Rep. Zimpolowski. We have about 5 more minutes. I'm going to call on Representative Erickson in a minute to ask questions of Rep. Zimpolowski, and then we're going to hear Rep. Mariani's bill, which actually is the Science Museum, which I don't know if it'll touch on any of this or not. We have technology bills coming up, and Rep. Zimpolowski, I don't know if you have a bill about in this area.
I don't. I'm going to try to just do it.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, it gives us an idea of some of the things we can think about being implemented with some of the bills that we do have coming up. So thank you.
Okay, now, ma'am, just one other point. This can be turned into a textbook in this way. All of the PowerPoints can literally be printed out. And that's what I'm going to do this fall. Put them together and then have them as a backup for students who don't actually see it in class so they can go back to it. Now, I'm still working on this. If you see me on the House floor, and some of you have, I know Representative Gavin has on occasion, and the images look historic, it's because I'm working on it.
Thank you very much, Representative Erickson, and then we have Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Blasky, what kinds of tests or assessments did you use for your...
For the history. The quizzes are much tougher than the tests. The quizzes are almost all very heavily laden with graphics and short answer or small essay. And they have to identify the works of art. For instance, in my Renaissance unit, the beginning are about 44 different works of art. They have to identify by title and artist. And then there are questions dealing with the historic relevance of the artwork. So if some of you have received a Christmas card called Botticelli's Adoration of the Magi.
Yes.
My students would be able to tell you that the 3 generations of the Medici are there, and that they are there because Botticelli had been patronized by the Medici, and that that's not a Christmas card, that's an ode to political power, and probably had an ulterior motive. So other than that, that would be a typical question I'm going to answer.
Then, Madam Chair, just an incidental question. Just how difficult was your test in that the P.S. is, I don't think your tests are too hard, no matter what anyone else says. Speak into the microphone.
Mr. Hansen.
Madam Chair, how difficult are the tests? Difficult would be what I could say, very difficult. I mean, I excelled well enough in the class. I'm not here to boast. But quizzes, as you mentioned, quizzes are much more difficult than the tests. The one he was referring to with the art from the Renaissance, that was incredible. But, you know, and to briefly touch on what he is saying, his class is like none other you'll ever experience in the high school. And to have... As tech-savvy as he is, and to have all this incorporated, students I know that I've never seen in previous classes be inspired to learn history before, you know, which is considered to be a mundane subject, they light up. I mean, because he's catering to what students like to do in their free time with, you know, watch videos and do different things like this. He's catering to the students and is really making learning fun. And it's incredible. So.
I never thought I'd see the day, but I think Representative Plowski is blushing. Mr. Hansen, why don't you stay there? We have one last question. In case this involves you, you won't have to run back and forth. Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Plowski, this is great stuff. It's related again to what I said about preparation. And I was, for my question is spurred by the comment made about how we get others to do this. He said, well, I just do it. How do we take the excitement that you have for what you're doing and the enjoyment that you have in what you're doing to do all these new technologies? This, how do we as policymakers replicate this? How do we encourage this through policy to get this type of teaching, which I think students and all of us would agree, is, and as you know, it's probably the way we should be going. How do we do that as a legislature?
Rep. Zimpolowski.
Madam Chair, Representative. One way to do it is to ensure this is taught at the collegiate level. I teach my teaching social studies class out of my classroom of an Illinois Senior High. They are required to use this technology. They are required to develop lessons. quizzes and tests based on those lessons, because there are things like PowerPoint as well. There's terrible use of this technology, and there's good use of it. Then they're required to work with high school students in the model legislature with their technology to see how they can help high school students with the technology and learning. Well, I think that the tremendous failure we've had is not to get multiple bangs for the dollars we've invested in public higher ed and K-12 education. Why our colleges of education aren't hermetically sealed to our private and public K-12 systems baffles me. And why most of those classes aren't in those settings with those students learning how to teach in that setting and then taking the technology. Because most of the collegiate technology is in advance of the K-12. And you should be able to, if we spend money for technology at Winona State, all of the private and public K-12 should benefit from that. Because it's tax dollars at work. And we have not done it. We should do it. We should do it on a regular basis. There should be no reason why that college of education, no class should be taught on the site of the campus. They should be taught out there where the students are. That's just my opinion.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. A living, vivid example of the Gates rigor, relevance, and I would say relationships, too, watching you and Mr. Hansen. Thank you both very much. One last thing from your committee administrator.
Representative Pawlowski. I was just reminded by my very excellent committee administrator, who was once the committee administrator to this committee, that if we could just clarify the policy for using textbook dollars for technology to make sure it's crystal clear across the state, that would be very helpful. There still seems to be confusion out there that you cannot use textbook dollars for technology like this. And that, I think, would at least go along with those school districts and the teachers who would wish to use those dollars.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Pawlowski and Mr. Manderscheid. It sounds like something we might be interested in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I do enjoy this.
It's very obvious that you do, and we did as well. Representative Mariani has a hard act to follow.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
My name is Carlos Mariani, State Representative from St. Paul. And Madam Chair, I would move House File 493 be recommended to pass, and our intent would be to have this laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus K-12 finance bill.
Representative Mariani moves House File 493 recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee you're already part of, and please proceed and introduce your guests.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is tough to follow Representative Pawlowski. It's been my privilege to have served with him the entire time that I've been here, and we've had many of these discussions in long hours during long lulls on the House floor, and so I would encourage other members to come visit Representative Pawlowski's desk, where he always has his computer, and he's got lots of fun stuff to show you during those long hours at night. Madam Chair, I will try to be very brief, in part because our bill on one level is very simple, and also because Representative Swales, who's up after me, has a number of testifiers. I want to make sure we honor her testifiers with enough time to present to the committee. House File 493 involves STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math disciplines. Many of you know that the Minnesota Science Museum is truly one of the treasures that I believe, truly one of the treasures that we have in our state. I didn't know until recently the sort of status that this museum plays nationally. It actually is one of the major providers of services to other museums across the country in a very highly competent way. What I also didn't know, however, was that the museum itself is a major provider in the state of Minnesota of teacher professional development services in the science and math fields. And every year, I'm being conservative, I believe when I say hundreds, maybe it's thousands, but hundreds of teachers a year receive professional development opportunities and trainings through the Science Museum. And hundreds of probably thousands of students a year receive classroom instruction as well. Hundreds of thousands, I'm told. Okay. This bill would make an appropriation of $750,000 a year for science for the Science Museum's STEM teacher development and classroom outreach initiative. It is my hope, members, that this bill will be seen as an option through a proven high-quality provider of science and math teacher training in this state, that it be seen as an option that could fit within the governor's proposal to advance STEM teacher development and resourcing statewide. And so with that, I am going to turn it over to David, I take it, David and Liesl. And I'll let them introduce themselves and then proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chittenden, please introduce yourself for the tape and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Dave Chittenden. I'm Vice President for Education at the Science Museum of Minnesota. I also serve as board chair of SciMathMin, a nonprofit statewide education and business coalition based at the Science Museum that advocates for quality K-12 STEM education based on research, national standards, and effective practices. Joining me today here is Liesl Chapman, who's director of our teacher professional development program at the museum. Several other colleagues may join us during the question and answer portion of the meeting. First of all, I am delighted to have this opportunity to testify today on behalf of House File 493, the Science Museum's proposal for a statewide science, technology, engineering, and math initiative. Dr. Eric Jolly, the president of the Science Museum, regrets that he is unable to appear today. He is speaking before the National Meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science in San Francisco. My colleague and I will make some brief remarks and then welcome your questions. Our comments will cover three major points: the challenges Minnesota faces in science and math education, the Science Museum's extensive experience and programs supporting K-12 teachers and students, and our proposal you are considering to expand services and support to the state's teachers and students, especially in the critical middle school years. I know that many of you already are aware of the obstacles we face in Minnesota and indeed the nation in attracting and retaining student interest in science, technology, mathematics, and engineering education, and the challenges providing a quality STEM education that will allow our students, our children, to pursue STEM careers and be competitive in the emerging STEM-based economy. However, I believe it is helpful to remind ourselves just how difficult and persistent these challenges are. Let me briefly illustrate this with some Minnesota context. The museum's analysis of the needs we face in STEM education reflects, I believe, three main challenges, all of which need our attention and would be addressed in this STEM initiative before you. First, students are not engaged. Over the next 10 years, economic forecasters project a 20 to 33% increase in scientific and technical occupations in Minnesota. If you want a high-paying job, it will most likely be STEM in STEM areas. Unfortunately, recent studies have shown that Minnesota students demonstrate a declining interest in pursuing STEM-related careers, and fewer of them are taking the rigorous coursework in math and science that will allow them to pursue such careers. If we can't get students excited and interested in STEM projects and STEM subjects and keep them engaged through the critical middle school years, we've lost. Minnesota's technology and science-related businesses will find skilled scientists and technical workers in our new STEM-driven economy and our new global workforce, but they may not be Minnesota students. Second, there is an achievement gap. We need to close the STEM achievement gap and build the knowledge and skills capacity of all students. Our communities and schools are more diverse than ever before, and this trend will surely continue. While we are making some progress, regrettably, the expectations and academic achievement gap between students of color and white students remains large and intractable. Put simply, we are not succeeding with the students with the greatest needs, and we must do better. Third, classroom practices must be improved so that the new high standards can be met successfully. While the revised Minnesota math standards you are approving and the requirement for eighth graders to take algebra are important improvements, what must we do beyond new standards to assure that our middle school students, our eighth graders, arrive in the classroom prepared to succeed and do succeed? Minnesota has lagged other leading education states in seeing that our students take rigorous math and science. We ask a lot from teachers in elementary and middle school, and I believe that most teachers are doing a fantastic job, often under difficult conditions. Yet despite their dedication and commitment, many of our teachers do not have the educational background or specific skills required to excite and motivate student interest in science and math. We can't engage greater student interest in math and science unless we do a better job in providing the type of classroom experiences and instruction that create STEM interest and build high-level science and math skills over time. With expected teacher turnover, this challenge will be continuous and require ongoing support. All of us engaged in educational reform and improvement need to do more to support students and teachers, and we need to provide such support consistently over time. These few challenges that I just described mirror what Dr. Eric Jolly suggests in a widely distributed monograph entitled Engagement, Capacity, and Continuity, A Trilogy for Student Success. Dr. Jolly's research found that for maximum student success, three elements should be addressed within the context of any educational reform program. His reform framework identifies that the most successful programs are those that include engagement strategies, capacity building activities, and continuity supports as core drivers for success. In this framework for students, to be successful in STEM pursuits, they must be first engaged. There must be strategies to excite, motivate, inflame, engage their interest. Second, once engaged, there must be ways to build their STEM capacity, to increase their STEM knowledge and skills. And third, the system in which they are engaged needs to provide appropriate institutional support, program opportunities, and guidance that allow advancement to increasingly rigorous content. This is continuity. The Museum STEM Initiative we're presenting includes all three of these elements. For those of you who may not be aware of the extensive programs the museum provides, the statewide K-12 system, I'd like to introduce you to the major components of our program. First, school visits. This past year, over 148,000 K-12 students visited the museum on field trips or to participate in multiple-day science residency programs to enrich their science learning. Second, our school outreach programs. Our professionally staffed school outreach program has a fleet of vans that crisscross the state delivering science enrichment experiences that do excite student engagement in STEM and support improved teacher classroom practice. Last year, we served a total of 109,000 students at 355 different schools and 59 community centers through this outreach programming. Third, teacher professional development. Over 1,500 Minnesota teachers participated in significant professional development programs offered by the museum, ranging from content conferences and workshops to week-long summer institutes. And fourth, school partnerships. The museum is partnering with specific school districts to support individual schools over longer periods of time. We are currently supporting a physical sciences instruction for the new charter high school, the St. Paul Conservatory for the Performing Arts, and we are instrumental in developing the successful museum magnet school still operating within the St. Paul School District. We understand schools. We understand the K-12 enterprise and have been a trusted and successful partner in many educational improvement efforts with them. The Science Museum is unique in that it bridges to and operates effectively within the K-12 system. The museum has unique assets that it can bring to our proposed statewide STEM initiative as we work collectively to address these STEM challenges. Some assets that I'd like to describe that MMM will bring to this effort. No other statewide science education organization has the reach and impact of the museum. We have a tested outreach infrastructure and program support systems. The museum has extensive statewide contacts and networks at all levels. The museum is organizing the first professional network for district science coordinators, math coordinators, through a grant from the Medtronic Foundation. and has strong presence in the Minnesota Science Teachers Association and other professional associations such as the Minnesota Elementary Elementary School Principals Association. Museum staff are experts in using inquiry to teach science and math. We are currently working with the International Baccalaureate School to assist them in this area. And we are leaders in convening and organizing statewide policy leadership forums on education reform. This past year, we hosted four major forums, including two of the governor's forums on STEM improvement. In closing, the Science Museum is absolutely committed to advancing pre-K-12 student interest and achievement in science and math. In investing in our STEM initiative, you will be investing in an institution and staff that understands the challenges of K-12 STEM reform, has the organizational capacity, relationships, and experience to create program success, and understands and can implement the reform models and approaches that need to be put in place that will allow our children to be competitive in the emerging STEM economy. Our proposal to you is to fund an integrated statewide K-12 initiative with two major program thrusts, a teacher resource center and a middle school math initiative. Now I'd like to turn to my colleague, Ms. Liesl Chapman, who will briefly describe these two integrated efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Chittenden. Ms. Chapman.
I'm Liesl Chapman,
for the record.
Yep. It's a pleasure to be here with you. I know many of you have teaching backgrounds, your current teachers or retired teachers, and I know that you have great expertise in this area. At the Science Museum, we seek to create a STEM education center of excellence that will serve our state and be an innovative national model as well. The proposed STEM education center of excellence will address these broad goals to improve educators' effectiveness in promoting STEM achievement, to develop leadership at all levels in STEM education, to increase equity, access, and achievement in STEM with respect to disadvantaged and or underrepresented youth, and to integrate STEM disciplines, especially through the study of sustainable energy and global climate change. The organizing hub of this initiative will be the Teacher Resource Center at the Science Museum's Science House, which is a freestanding building located on the museum campus. Science House is the state's only 100% green facility. It generates all of its energy needs. The Resource Center will be used by teachers in member districts and teachers who have been a part of our extensive professional development institutes, which draw teachers from all over the state. The Teacher Resource Center will be up and running in Science House this fall with generous funding from 3M. It was designed to support science education. The proposed funding will allow us to expand its focus to comprehensively include mathematics along with the applied fields of engineering and technology. The center will be organized through a membership structure that will enable any teacher in a member district to use the resource center on an unlimited basis. Charter schools, colleges, and universities who are not affiliated with districts can also become members. The proposed state funding will allow us to underwrite memberships for districts who are struggling fiscally due to declines in enrollment, outdated facilities, unfunded mandates, and or high populations of underserved students for whom additional services are needed to be provided, such as special education, all-day kindergarten, and special instruction for English language learners. State funding will also allow us to underwrite membership dues for charter schools. During our planning process, we conducted surveys and focus groups with STEM teachers from Greater Minnesota and have identified the possibility of having geographically dispersed satellite centers through the Minsky system and area museums. Additional funding would also significantly increase the museum's capacity to integrate professional development and the school outreach programs that they've described that serve virtually the entire state through the deployment of mobile vans and dedicated staff. At its heart, the center will provide exemplary classroom materials to support hands-on inquiry and investigation. These materials will focus on science standards and amplify unique resources through the museum that would otherwise be unavailable, such as artifacts from the SMM collections, or that would be cost prohibitive for a school district to purchase. State funding will allow us to expand these resources to include standards aligned materials to support math along with engineering and technology.
Ms. Chapman, if you could finish up in about a minute because we want to have time for questions and public testimony, and we've got just a little over 5 minutes left for this section.
Okay. Other services that the center will provide are informal and formal consultation, so teachers can drop in on an after-school basis and receive consultation from staff members who have expertise in math, science, and research. It will also allow us to engage in a lot of program support and integration so that we can customize services for member districts either at the center or out in the field, designing school-based or district-based services that would integrate math and science. It will also promote social networking and community building, which is a key aspect for supporting new teachers and teacher retention. This networking will also extend to administrative level and promote leadership development. I want to just close with talking about some key aspects of math integration. Our request for funding will allow us to accomplish our goals through the program enhancements and expansions that I've described. I want to take a moment to underscore the importance of integrating math in a robust manner into our current professional development work. Math and science, as Dave has described, are gateways to higher education and high-paying jobs. It's critical that all our students are taking math by ninth grade, and I applaud the efforts to have this happen in eighth grade. In order for our students to be successful, we've got to prepare teachers and the kids to be successful for those math courses. With our policies and rigorous coursework, the Science Museum is positioned to support this. Our Medtronic-supported math packs, which provide mathematics-oriented enhancement materials for field trips, were featured on the cover of the Journal for the National Council of Mathematics of Teachers, and our staff of scientific researchers use math every day in their research. Math is the language of science. It is the language of innovation. Science and engineering are the contexts for math. Matt Ritchie, who's a professor of mathematics at St. Olaf College, recently said that teachers of math must teach the math that will be used, not the math that was used. He's framed these arenas as follows: algebraic thinking, data analysis skills, computational proficiency, and the interconnectedness of mathematical problem-solving skills. Through the infusion of state funding, we will be able to embed into all our professional development programs this integrated approach to math and science teaching and learning. We are especially interested in the thoughtful and precise scope and sequence of mathematical concepts and the assessment of student learning and thinking. These are exciting, challenging, and worthy times in education to undertake this initiative. I want to thank you for your time and your thoughtful deliberation on this proposal.
Thank you very much. How does this tie in with the governor's work and initiatives on STEM? Mr. Chittenden.
I will confess I'm not that familiar with all of the governor's initiatives on STEM. Of course, we hosted two of the, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, and representatives, we hosted two events at the museum, and I know that Governor Polente is keenly interested in supporting STEM enrichment, both in terms of making career awareness in STEM areas much more available to students, and in supporting systematic reform. I think he's focusing on high school reform more than he is middle school and elementary. I think we are complementary to Governor Polente's approach. We believe that if you do not reach and engage and excite elementary students and middle school students and prepare them to be successful, they will not be in high school. So I applaud high school reform. I think it's necessary. Personally, I think my colleagues do. But we need to focus. We need to focus resources and efforts on building bridges from elementary and middle school to high school so that our students can be successful. So I will certainly find out more about what Governor Polente is suggesting. We would love to buttress his ideas with ours and our efforts.
Thank you very much. As a former elementary teacher, I liked that answer. Is there any public testimony from the audience? or against. Okay, well then we'll close with the last questioner, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Greiling. Testifiers, I'm very impressed with your presentation. And I think you have a lot of 3M retired chemists and engineers and others who volunteer. I know at least volunteer for you. Probably even teach much of what is taught in the Science Museum. And I thank you for serving Representative Biskins, who used to serve on this committee in his conservatory charter school. He's very impressed with your program. But most of all, I thank you for bringing the middle school level to the table. And I see that it could be very complementary with the governor's initiative as he moves STEM more deeply into the high school level. But you're so right. We have to reach those elementary and middle school students, and the kinds of things that you bring to the table, whether or not, you know, we can incorporate this, I don't know, but you have given us a wealth of ideas to work with, so thank you.
Thank you very much. Rep. Mariani, any closing comment?
Madam Chair, again, it's my hope that as we work with the governor's language, he's got $6 million, I believe, on the table in his proposal to provide staff development curriculum and instructional material support in STEM disciplines around the state, that this could be a viable way in which we can deliver and marry our concern here in the legislature for advancing STEM disciplines with the governors.
Thank you very much. I think you rang a lot of bells with all the members here, it sounds like. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam
Chair members.
Representative Swale.
Thank you,
Rep. Swale, since you are also a member of the committee, please move your bill.
Yes.
When you get your testifier settled.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is my pleasure to, first of all, thank the committee for going on our field trip yesterday. I thoroughly enjoyed the children. I just was so thrilled that they were as excited to have us, and I felt like you were excited to be there. So thank you so much for that opportunity to share my school district with you.
Thank you for having us. It was a wonderful trip. I think we all went away just being very energized. It was a nice precursor at Gateway to the hearing today, and then later we'll be discussing world languages, so you gave us a preview on that as well.
All right, thank you. Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 543 to be passed and laid over into the K-12 omnibus bill.
Representative Swales moves House File 543 for getting on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you. I will just speak very, very briefly, but I wanted to comment on a conversation I had yesterday at one of the tables with the children at the Gateway School. I asked each of the children that I met, well, what do you want to do when you're finished with college? And it was interesting. Their answers were, of course, what a gifted and talented response would be. One child said, well, I want to be an electrical engineer. Another said, I want to be a biochemical engineer. Another said, I want to be an architect. Another said, author. Another said, doctor. And the last little boy I talked to said, I want to be a football player. So that felt right. That felt like the right answer. So I just want you to know that these gifted and talented children that we saw yesterday are children, and they have the same interests and the same passions that all children have. They just have a higher cognitive ability to be able to process information and knowledge and be able to apply it at a higher level. Before Mr. Kilty, who I will introduce in just a moment, speaks, I just wanted to share an email I received today. I'll just read a small portion of it because it's quite long, from a parent whose children are at Gateway at Royal Oaks that we visited yesterday. This is an email from Chris and Kathy Crosby Schmidt. He is a computer programmer, and his wife is a physician. And they wrote, "We could not be happier. Our daughter took the time, or took to the program like a fish to fresh river water. School is no longer a holding pen where she kills time, but an exciting place filled with new discoveries every day. Her vocabulary has expanded, her reading and writing skills have sharpened, and she has begun to build her knowledge of geography and current events. She has explored fundamental math concepts. I'll never forget her delight in showing me how to convert a base 10 number to a base 5, which led to a discussion of binary, octal, and hexadecimal numbers used in computing." And to me, that's great. So I am truly impressed. At this time, I would like to introduce the gentleman to my right. His name is Bill Kilty, and he's going to be discussing the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kilty, and if you would please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Kilty. I coordinate gifted services in Spring Lake Park, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Educators of Gifted and Talented. It's a statewide advocacy organization. I want to thank, first, those members who have voiced their support for legislation, those of you that were there 2 years ago, because we received funding, and it was long overdue. 2 years ago, that funding returned support to 85,000 of Minnesota students. I want to thank you, and I also want to let you know that what was intended in that legislation has not emerged in practice. I intend to address two issues that have emerged both in the conversations that I've had with parents and teacher advocates, as well as in my observations in district practice. While I agree with the concept of local control and support for a district's board's choice to determine how limited resources are to be distributed, I have observed and have received communications from parents and teachers that concern me and challenge my beliefs. I've testified in the past on the importance of funding for gifted students, and I have been joined by many knowledgeable others who have also spoken in support of that funding. 4 years ago, we had a superintendent join us at a similar table in the Senate chambers. That superintendent testified that he believed if the state did not direct districts to spend dollars earmarked for gifted students on gifted students and their programs, there would be greater compelling reasons to spend it elsewhere. In this week's New York Times, author Joseph Berger wrote, and I quote this as close as I can, because I had to fill in a little bit because he didn't say exactly what I wanted him to say, but it's almost verbatim. "Districts needing to pay for after-school tutoring and other score-raising remedies, such as literacy coaches and math mentors, needed under No Child Left Behind, inevitably poach dollars from programs for students who already score high. In Minnesota, the efforts to avoid the stigma of failing schools shifts dollars towards remediation and leaves little time or resources for enrichment or acceleration, much less program coordination. I no longer believe a district should have the choice of whether or not the dollars should be spent on their students. Another aspect of 543 addresses funding. In some of the districts, the legislation over the past 2 years has made a difference, but it has been insufficient. A district of 1,500 students wishing to establish a program for their gifted students would normally look towards enrichment. It usually plays out in after-school experiences. One such option is Destination Imagination. It and its predecessor, Odyssey of the Mind, is considered the largest academic competition in the state. Internationally, there are over 1 million students participating in this program. To field a team of 7 students, complete with a coach, resources, registrations, transportations, and supplies, pushes the district's capacity. In serving those 7 students, a district could expend over $2,000, and they would only be serving 7 of the potential 150 students who would qualify for gifted services. House File 543 is asking for a change in the language and an increase in expenditures. I believe, and many of my colleagues believe, it's in the best interest of these students, and it's in our collective enlightened self-interest that legislation be in place that requires districts to allocate resources to those initiatives this legislation identifies. We also believe that increasing the dollar amount will provide to districts across the state the resources they require to implement quality programming. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd also like to reintroduce to our committee Marcia Dolezal, is that how I say it? And she is the coordinator of the Gateway Program at Royal Oaks, and one of the teachers that we met yesterday. This is Teresa Campbell.
Welcome, Ms. Dolezal. It's good to see you again. We very much enjoyed the chance to get to your wonderful school program.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to come here this afternoon and share again my passion, which that is my passion, meeting the needs for the gifted kids, in particular in our school district, because I'm the coordinator of the gifted kids. From third grade through sixth grade in our district, we have 432 kids that are identified. Out of those children, 50 of them go to Gateway, and our board has approved two more classrooms for next year, so we will have 100 students at Gateway. But we also have a cluster program, which we hope through your help in passing this bill, we can meet their needs better through our cluster program and through some grade telescoping and parallel curriculum writing, so that we can have time for them to have more complex thinking and higher level skills in the classroom, too. So I would like to introduce Teresa so she could share a little bit the difference between the regular curriculum in the other classrooms and Gateway.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell. If you could scoot your chair up, and I hope you're feeling better. You said you just come off your sick bed yesterday.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Sorry, my voice is not much better, so I'll be as loud as I can. I would like to thank you, the members who were able to make it to the program yesterday, and
you also, excuse me, identify. I forgot to.
I'm sorry.
My mistake. Please identify yourself for the tape.
It's Teresa Campbell.
Thank you.
And prior to actually visiting the classrooms yesterday, I was able to tell you how the classrooms don't really look any different, how the kids wouldn't look any different. I forgot to tell you the conversations would be a lot different. So you got to see that firsthand. And as a teacher for 12 years in a typical classroom, it's very difficult to have such a range where you have special ed students all the way to these highly gifted students, and trying to meet the needs of all these kids. And I really feel like this is the first year that I have been able to meet the needs of those kids. And you've seen some of the testimonies of their parents and of the children themselves. I wish I could say there's something magical we're doing in the classroom or magical curriculum, and it's not. But when you see what's happening there, it's very necessary for the students. So thank you for the consideration.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I would like to just add that...
Could you identify yourself? All right, I said your name. Go ahead.
I'm Marcia Dolezal.
Yeah.
And I would just like to add that this is really out of need, not want. And what has made me more passionate about it was reading the Templeton National Report on Acceleration, entitled "A Nation Deceived: How Our Schools Hold Back Our Brightest Children." And I read that back in 2005 when I got this job. And this is what made me even more passionate about working toward change, systemic change in our schools.
Thank you. If this bill were passed, what would you use the extra money for in your district?
I will expand Gateway and also spend time on curriculum writing with a parallel curriculum, which would take a considerable amount of money to do, to make sure that every grade level has access to this complex thinking for the cluster children. Mm-hmm. And also to, right now I do all the training of the teachers for the cluster awareness, and it could be a lot better. And I know that I would be able to use the money for that and to help just improve the curriculum.
Thank you very much. Representative Morgan, and then Representative Faust.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I want to thank you all for having us over yesterday. That was it was an incredible experience to sit down, and I had a chance to work with a couple of girls who were doing a math problem, and they were very excited. They were in third or fourth grade, and they were working on, they said, sixth grade math, and that was very exciting for them, and we were talking about squaring numbers, which was exciting for me as a physics teacher. But I wanted to make the comment and maybe ask the question. Those of us who represent school districts, and there are a lot of us here who are in declining enrollment, and I know that South Washington County is growing as a school district, and growing districts have advantages over declining enrollment districts. Obviously, funding particular programs like this would help alleviate that. But I'm assuming that right now there is not enough gifted and talented funding in current law to fund what you are doing at South Washington County, that there's general fund money that you're using to pay for what you're doing, even
that's
at the
correct
level you're doing it now.
Isn't
that
correct? Yes, that's
yes.
Correct.
Madam Chair, my next question is, I know that one of the struggles that declining enrollment districts face is the elimination of these many good programs, even music specialist programs, art specialist, and so forth, and even to keep our class sizes at a livable level. I didn't do a head count when I was in your classes the other day, but the third and the fourth grade and the fifth and the sixth grade, at what level are you able to staff those classes at this point in time?
Ms. Dalazal. At what level?
Student class size. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
We have it maxed out at 25 okay. per classroom.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Bowser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really enjoyed what I saw yesterday. It was a great experience, and I wish that we could expand that to other schools in Minnesota. My question, though, is actually, where is the extra cost in doing what you're doing compared to a regular class? You've got the same size classroom, the same number of kids in the classroom. You're using the same curriculum only a year ahead or 2 years or 3 years ahead. So where is the extra cost in doing what you're doing compared to the classroom that was right next door?
That was all. Well, actually, we have two more teachers, so we have two additional teachers that have to be filled from moving them from a different place or a different school. So that's the cost, and then there is the cost in just training the teachers, and they have to write the curriculum and make it more rigorous for the students that are in there. They spend hours, really literally hours, outside of the classroom, making this just a more rigorous program for the kids. And
Ms. Campbell.
Yes, and we also have extended technology in our classrooms. So the district has provided us each with 10 computers and a smart board, which is the interactive whiteboard. So we have some resources that way that are very helpful, and especially with kids like this, they're doing a lot of research, and have that available right in the classroom is a definite added expense. As well as some of the curriculum that you saw yesterday is advanced a couple of grade levels, and it's curriculum the district already uses. But we've also purchased a lot of William & Mary curriculum from their School of Education for gifted kids. So there is additional cost.
Kristen Bimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question actually is perfect for Representative Swales. Representative Swales, one of the things that you do in your bill is you change it to empowering schools to do this to saying they have to do it. Do you know how many schools are currently not offering any kind of gifted and talented, and have you looked into what it might cost them to start up something?
I believe Mr.
Representative Swales.
Excuse me. Mr. Kelty, could one of the new, give him a chair and a microphone? And
we have a parade today, I'm sorry.
Mr. Kelty.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer.
Demmer, yes.
It is, I cannot give you an exact number. I don't have that available, but I know I can find that information out from our gifted specialists at the Department of Education. We have a pretty good idea that in smaller districts, gifted programming does not exist. They just don't have the resources to make that happen. In larger districts, those programs have begun to disappear. I can give you just one example of something an advocate, actually a former coordinator, came to me from Cloquet saying that she had been the full-time coordinator of gifted programs for 15 years. She retired. And when she retired, the position was replaced by a quarter-time position to coordinate the full gifted program. So, in general, what we're seeing is that the districts are strapped for resources. And that language says they may choose to do it, but they don't have to.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, you just gave me this. I just got information from Representative Dabney that says 343 out of 343 districts, in other words, all of them are using gifted and talented monies and have some sort of program in place. So I'm wondering, that's just information, I guess. When I see must instead of may, you know, that... I know you spoke to the local control issue. I, as a former school board member, I hated that. because I always thought I could make decisions about our school district and use our resources accordingly. And I guess just as an editorial comment, if a school district feels they have other needs, for us to dictate that they put them in a certain place, I think is a bit over the top, in my opinion. But I see from the research, this is from... DFL research that shows 343 out of the 343. So.
You know it's good.
Right. I will, since this is the information I have, I'll assume that's the case. It's good. Thank you.
And Representative Demmer, also on the bill, it says they must spend the revenue only too, but then they have choices. They can either identify gifted and talented students, or they can provide programs for them, or they can provide staff development. And so, you know, but it sounds like with the good information you got, most of them are identifying them at this moment. Yeah. All right. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to say thank you again for that tour. That was really great. I got to sit next to a young man that's doing high school algebra. I think he was in the fifth grade and doing high school algebra. That's really talented. My question, I don't know who could answer this, but you mentioned that there's maxed out at 25 kids per class. Would this money help teachers that you may be able to bring on? And is there a list of kids that you want to bring on at the current time?
Yes, there are. We have... I'd like to bring on all 432 of our students to participate in this program. Could I please just address the question?
Ms. Dalzell, please do.
Question. I did want to say something about the money. I am the coordinator, and I'm the coordinator for 14 elementary schools. I am it. And so there's I have cluster representatives that are paid $22 an hour for like 3 days a year, and they disseminate academic challenges. We really don't have people in each school to help support the cluster teachers and really help them with the curriculum so there's something really going on with these kids, so there's accountability for implementation. And so this is partly why I'm very passionate about being able to put more people in the classrooms that can help the kids, and we can be accountable for the implementation. So I just felt like I needed to add that. And then to answer your question, yes, we would use the money to hire more teachers to meet the needs of the kids in the Gateway School, and also to possibly be coordinators for the individual schools in the district.
Thank you. I think we'll go to public testimony now, and then we'll go back if we have time to, I think we will, to legislators. So, that's just well, that's the end of your hearing, and now there's your public members up here.
Madam Chair, these are people who have traveled all the way from Rochester who would like to share their thoughts.
So this is part of your hearing still, too. Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Amundson, and I'm from Rochester. I came to bring you the story of how the new dedicated funding has been used in Rochester the last 2 years. Most importantly, I'm a parent of 9 and 11-year-old children, but I am also the president of, and this is a little bit confusing, we're called Gateway, but we've had the name for almost 20 years. we're the parent advocacy group for gifted education in Rochester. So I'm representing a lot of really passionate parents and some great kids down in Rochester. Rochester is sort of an interesting school district. We have about 3 times the national average of gifted children. So there's a little bit more weight there, and so we already did have a gifted and talented program in Rochester, but it was very limited. For instance, if you are a kindergarten through second grader, you have no different experience than any other child in a traditional classroom. In third grade, you begin to see a gifted and talented specialist for 42 minutes every 6 school days, unless you are identified for both language and math or science, which is only about a quarter of the kids. They get to see them twice every 6 school days, so there could be a whole week that you're not gifted. You're only gifted, you know, once every 6 school days for 42 minutes. So the experience is very limited, and it actually gets worse in middle school until recently. You were only eligible as a gifted student for accelerated math. And accelerated math was just basically skipping either 1 or 2 years of math and going to a more advanced class. High school got a little bit better because of honors option and AP classes. But even so, Rochester was spending a lot of their own general fund dollars on gifted and talented education, and it wasn't meeting the needs of our kids. 2 years ago, when the new funding was initiated, the parents came to the Rochester School Board and said, you know, now we have this new money, the $4 per pupil, which was about $72,000 in Rochester. Here, you know, what are we going to do with this money, and how are we going to improve it? And they said, we're not. We're going to replace the general fund dollars. And so there was going to be no new funding. They said all they could do with $72,000 is add a teacher. There are 6 full-time equivalent teachers for about 3,000 gifted students in Rochester. And so I can understand where they're coming from. You know, what can you do with $72,000 adding one other teacher? But we persisted, and of course the second year was $9 per pupil, so that was more money. We were able to use this as leverage to ask for some new programs. They said, what would you like us to spend this new money on? We mobilized and we gave them a nice proposal. And it's actually helped us to get our school board and our administration to consider new programs for the whole spectrum of needs, gifted through highly gifted and K through 12. However, we are again at a halt because of the funding issue. Most of the programs that we've asked to be implemented are cost-efficient or even cost-neutral. We just reallocate the staffing. But in gifted programming, very often identification is an issue, and testing is very expensive. And so some of our programs are halted right now because of identification, some because our gifted and talented specialists, we only have one. We're about the same size as South Washington. They have 2. So there's a number of reasons why we really need this additional money in Rochester, and it will really help improve the experience for kids because we are short on time. But I wanted to address your question, Representative Demmer, about 343 out of 343 say they have gifted programming. There is a gray area in what is considered gifted education. As Mr. Kilkey mentioned, is Destination Imagination after school gifted programming. To some people, that fits the bill. To the parents in Rochester, we feel that's enrichment. And in Rochester, you don't have to be gifted to participate in Destination Imagination. So it could be that those school districts have a different definition than we do in Rochester, which is to be part of the school day. And preferably, we would like to see it part of every school day in some way. If that helps.
Thank you very much. And are you Mr. Boucher?
Yeah, I am Mr. Boucher.
Before you start, could I just ask if there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay. Very good. We've got 5 minutes left, and there is one legislator that would like to ask a question. So if you could plan your time accordingly.
Yes,
welcome
ma'am.
To the committee, and please state your name for the tape.
Bob Boucher, and I am actually from Lakeville, although with parking I could have driven to Rochester. to get here, but I thank you. I am the legislative co-chair of for the Minnesota Council for the Gifted and Talented, and joining me today are several of our members in the audience, Dana Coulthard, Carl Bundy, and Tina Armstrong, and we're here to speak in support of H.R. 543, and we appreciate you giving us a few minutes. The council is an advocacy group that advocates on behalf of gifted children and their parents statewide. We're a nonprofit organization composed primarily of parents, but also educators and other professionals. I also am the parent of two gifted children, one 20 and one 8, so my self-esteem is being damaged for a second time now in my life. And I want to echo some of the comments I've made and expand it just a little bit more broadly, but my 8-year-old I can speak to very directly because he was a first grader a year ago in a large Lakeville public school district. And we struggled to try to keep him challenged, have him in a group of his peers, and sat down with Lakeville, which is a very good district, and they worked very hard to meet our needs. But the reality was, as some other people had talked about, he would not be able to be in a group of his peers as a second grader. And so we were able to, fortunately, the Inver Grove Heights School District has their Anthoneum Gifted Program that they expanded last year to add a class for second and third graders, and we were able to have them involved in that. And to this bill, and back to some of the issues that have been raised, to me, the students who achieve at a high level should not have to change school districts to get an education that's appropriate to their needs. And that's part of where the council comes from. Every child in Minnesota deserves to be challenged and get the best opportunity they can, whatever end of the spectrum they fall into. And I have experienced that personally as a parent now and with my older son, that reality does not exist. And that actually leads into my last comments, which is just to touch on, you know, this is not just an issue for a small group of parents who are fortunate to be blessed with academically gifted students, but it's a broader issue to our state and really, I believe, to our nation. You know, when we talk about having a world-class education, there's money and funding that comes along with providing that. And my older son grew up in Iowa. They currently, their per-pupil funding, it's a formula, but it works out to roughly $50 to $60 per pupil unit, to give you a frame of reference. And more broadly, there's the issue of what's going on internationally. A Minnesotan, Tom Friedman, has written his book, The Earth, the World is Flat, talking about that. And I just want to read a couple quick quotes from articles that have been out recently.
I should, before you read them, I should, our time is actually up, and
okay.
So you could conclude in like 30 seconds.
No problem. Well, I think that is the key point that I wanted to raise, we wanted to raise. Our belief is, you know, there are two achievement gaps going on right now. One is bringing the bottom up to the middle, but there's also an achievement gap between the top students in our country and the top students in the rest of the world. And we are lagging well behind where the rest of the world is in terms of providing a quality education for our best students.
Thank you very much. And you make a very good point. We talk on this committee about closing the achievement gap, but we certainly don't want to do that by having the top stagnate. We want to have everybody moving up to the best of their abilities. So thank you very much. House File 543 and also 493 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and the meeting is adjourned.